So, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita. We're in chapter 11, which is entitled The Universal Form, and looks like we're on text 5. Since this is not written on the board, I guess I'll just sing the Sanskritam and then read the translation. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Pashyami Partharupani Satashota Sahasrashah Nana Vidhani Divyani Nana Varna Kritinicha. And translation to this is as follows, Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, O son of Pritha, see now my opulences, hundreds of thousands of varied, divine, and multicolored forms." Prabhupada's commentary. Arjuna wanted to see Krishna in his universal form, which although a transcendental form is just manifested for the cosmic manifestation and is therefore subject to the temporary time of this material nature. As the material nature is manifested and not manifested, similarly, this universal form of Krishna is manifested and non-manifested. It is not eternally situated in the spiritual sky like Krishna's other forms. As far as a devotee is concerned, he is not eager to see the universal form. But because Arjuna wanted to see Krishna in this way, Krishna reveals this form. This universal form is not possible to be seen by an ordinary man. Krishna must give one the power to see it. All right, let's sink our teeth into this. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Kenanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Kurave Namaha Mukham Karati Vachalam Pangum Langati Kirim Yat kripata maham bande shri gurum dinataranam. Pancha kalpata rubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo paishnavebhyo namo namam. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the translation once again is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, son of Pritha, see now my opulences, hundreds of thousands of varied, divine, and multicolored forms." Probably one of the most popular chapters in the Bhagavad Gita amongst non-devotees is this one. Not exactly the most popular one among devotees, which is very interesting. I also remember when I procured my first copy of the Bhagavad Gita, I immediately wanted to read this chapter, The Universal Form. Why? Because I wanted to see this crazy far-out form that Krishna displayed to Arjuna. In many ways, I wanted to be entertained. Not exactly a devotional attitude. Very interesting chapter, not because of the crazy vision that Arjuna had, which in itself is pretty interesting, because we have Arjuna sitting in one place and yet comprehending everything there is from one spot. But other interesting things that are happening here, other interesting things are that Arjuna is a devotee of Krishna. And the nature of devotion makes one be a little special. I'm not sure if that saying is known here, but at least in the States, people say that love is blind, or that love blinds. So in other words, if you're in love, you're blinded. You don't see right, right? Same, huh? Yeah. Now the interesting thing in Krishna consciousness is that it's other way around. That love makes you see. I mean, even in the mundane world, love makes you see that which other people may not see. But generally, love blinds. There is, Prabhupada used to quote, Prabhupada quoted a number of times, this funny Bengali saying that, that a mother gives her blind child the name of Padmalochan. Padmalochan means that this person has very beautiful eyes, but the person is blind. Because out of affection, the mom is very attached to the child, so gives the child that kind of a name. They also say that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I'm not sure if Bhakti Vaibhava Maharaj is still like that. I have not said in his lecture for a while, but he was super sensitive to any sound. Like, we wouldn't be even breathing when he'd be lecturing. Does he come here? I'm not like that, so I'm just reminded of a great personality. So. But you just, when you walked in, I was reminded of him. Like, even if someone did something like this, you would maybe detect it. And so everyone would be so silent, super silent. Harikesh was also a little bit like that. I remember when he came to lecture here, then no one would move so that the floor would make any noise. But there's also this other saying that the beauty is in the eye of the beholder. How do you translate that? Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Vidza. And so for a long time, especially in the academic circles, there's this understanding that if you want to be objective about something, you have to step outside of it. In other words, if you're influenced by it, then you cannot be objective about the thing you're observing or the thing you're wanting to comment upon. So therefore, you should step outside, separate yourself from it physically and also emotionally, so you can be objective about it. And of course, this makes a lot of sense. But then on the other hand, there are many things that you cannot understand unless you're actually experiencing the thing that the people, let's say, you're trying to learn about are experiencing. And the example to illustrate this, given by Srila Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and it is the example that Srila Prabhupada repeated many times, is the one of licking the bottle of honey, the jar of honey, rather than tasting the honey. itself. So we see that both principles have their place. In one case, you do have to step outside to be objective about the thing you're studying. And then yet, there are many situations where you have to actually dive into it. I remember you. Right? Yeah, you've been around here for a while. Sorry, when you walked in, familiar face. So in some ways, yes, the love is blinding, but then on the other hand, the love is actually opening the eyes. And this is certainly true in the case of Krishna consciousness. In some ways, we ought to take a distance from things, and in some ways we need to come very close to things. As a matter of fact, we need to be consumed by things. And things, should I call Krishna a thing? Probably not. But one should be consumed by Krishna and other forms of Krishna, such as Krishna's name, in order to actually understand them. And so if we read on in this chapter, I think in one, somewhere close, somewhere here, Prabhupada calls this a godless display of opulences. You're looking up in the computer? No. Anyhow, it's... godless display... It's a famous line, right? And yeah, I'm rushing. Usually when you rush, you can't find anything. Eleven eight. So let me see. And I was looking, amazing, I was looking at that and I couldn't see it. Oh, second paragraph. Okay, I see. Yeah, it's right there. Devotees who are correctly situated in a transcendental relationship with Krishna are attracted by loving features, not by godless display of opulences. Funny. Prabhupada calls, Prabhupada's words, he calls the universal form a godless display of opulences. What he's meaning to say is that this is a vision of a materialist. This is what I wanted to see when I got my first copy of the Bhagavad Gita. I wanted to see this godless display of opulences. Because psychologically, if something has an owner, then we're very careful not to possess the thing, not to take the thing into our possession, or disrespect the thing. So psychologically, materialists, they separate energies from their owner, and so therefore, this is a psychological state of a materialist that these opulences, meaning the material energy, the manifestation, does not have an owner. And later on in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will say that the core of a demonic, materialistic attitude is that there is Anishvara. Anishvara means there is no owner. that matter is just a free-floating stuff that's up for people's claims. It's up for people to claim. Yeah, okay. Up for grabs, yeah. It's up for grabs. That's the game. It's up for grabs. And because if the matter had had an owner, then the things would change. Just like if you own something, I would have a difficult time stealing that, at least in your presence. So Arjuna is actually totally not interested in the universal form. Not that he, in some ways, devotee is interested in God's energies, and devotee is interested in the universal form, but the devotee of Arjuna's caliber is not interested in universal form. Why? Because his time, energy, and attention is completely consumed by his relationship with Krishna. And so why is Arjuna then wanting to see this universal form? This is explained by Srila Prabhupada, I think, in the commentaries to first few verses. I can't remember right now, but in the beginning. Does anyone know? No? Okay, sorry to put you on the spot. Why did Arjuna want to see the universal form? Yeah, that's the reason. Arjuna simply wanted to demonstrate Krishna's divinity so that the cheaters of Kali Yuga later on would have a difficult time claiming their divinity. Because to pull off the universal form would require some amazing trickery. And so this was the motivation of, this was the Arjuna's motivation. That was it. There was no other reason. And this universal form here, it's said to be, on one hand, divine thing, because it is Krishna's manifestation, so it is a divine thing. But on the other hand, it's a very temporary thing. It's a thing that comes and goes. So devotee is not interested. And we see that this is also the position of devotees in the material world. They are and they're not interested in the material world. In which way devotees are not interested in the material world? Oh, as a matter of fact, that's in the section of the Bhagavatam that we have under discussion. Narad Muni told King Prachina Barhishat that all this material existence translates into a lot of activity for nothing. Na hrvatskom to se kaže čupaj pasadi. How do you say that? Na slovenski? Slovenščino? Po slovensko. No, can you repeat it in Slovenian? I'll get it. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. You're still, yeah, yeah. That's slightly different, though. Because over here, you do something, right? Like you plant something. And then as soon as it comes out, you pull it out and you throw it away. And then you repeat the process.
Because it's this Sisyphal thing,
Sisypho, yes. He was cursed, though. He had to roll the stone up to the top just to have it roll over to the other side. Yeah. In Dalmatia, they gave an example of a person in the boat who's lowering a bucket on one side of the boat, grabbing the water from the sea and then throwing it over on the other. It's like dumb stuff. The example that Srila Prabhupada gives is that in the Bhagavad Gita is that of the Ferris wheel. I'm not sure. I don't even know what they call that in Croatian. Yeah. Ferris wheel. Vrtiljak? Vrtiljak. But that's different though, because that spins this way. Ferris wheel goes this way. Goes up and then it comes down. It's just a big wheel. And there are seats on it. And so the soul is simply looping around. Because this is the nature of the existence in the material world. And so Narad Muni is trying to tell King Prachinabhari that it's all for nothing. There is a saying that don't abandon the permanent for temporary, because you will lose both. Because if you have abandoned the permanent in favor of temporary, the very nature of the temporary is that you cannot keep it. It expires. And this is the situation of everything in the material world, whether it's education, whether it's health, let alone just gross material possessions. Everything simply comes and goes. And so therefore intelligent people have since ever endeavored for something that's outside of this loop. So in this sense, devotees are not interested in the material world. Like a hamster on a wheel. Hrčak? On a wheel. It's simply running and it's just pointless. So similarly, life within the materialistic existence, it's exactly like that. In which point does the material existence actually gain value? At that point in which that material existence presents an opportunity of escape. Any videographers in the audience tonight? Videographers. No. Videographers that you're anyone who's involved in the production of videos. A little bit? Okay. More of a photographer. Okay, we can talk later on. I also like photography. There are these, in one point, some years ago, these short movies became very popular. Short movies that are sort of like horror stories. And what's a horror story? There's a person. The horror story is that person finds himself locked in a cycle. So, for example, the person's in the room and has an awesome time in the room. But then after a while wants to leave the room. And then he opens the door just to find oneself again in the same room. And then he looks back and it's the same room over here. And then he tries to go out the window. And then he goes out the window just to find oneself again in the same room. And then people got the point, so they started to make a little more elaborate schemes. Ground? Sorry, I missed the ground.
Groundhog Day.
Okay. So, glad you can relate to it. And so, you know, people got the concept, right? So they started expanding the theme, making it a little more elaborate, so that when the person leaves the room, person is actually in a different room. But then when the person leaves that room, eventually finds oneself again in the same position. And then when leaves that position, then goes again to the same room that went into after leaving the first room. In other words, finds oneself again in the cycle. And that's exactly life in the material world. One of the reasons why this is so psychologically impacting, because we can actually relate to it. Because the life is, materialistic life is exactly like that. It's a trap. And so Srila Prabhupada used the example of Ferris wheel. You just go up, and then you go down, and you go up, and you go down, and so, at first it's interesting, but then after a while it turns into a nightmare, into literally a horror. And so to escape this bad dream, I actually had a friend, he used to have a nightmare where he would dream that he would fall into a well, and a very deep well. And he'd be falling in the well. Falling, and then he'd be screaming. And then he would see the bottom, and the bottom was dry. In other words, there was no water. And he'd be like, ah! And then the bottom would open up. And then he would continue to fall. And he would again be screaming, and then he'd be approaching again, second bottom. Dry again, no water. And he'd be screaming, ah, no! And then it would open up again, and then it would just rush through it, continue to fall. And then eventually it would, in the dream, it would beg that it doesn't open up, that it just wants to die. It becomes so bad. Yeah. And yeah, some other time about it, but it's interesting how he solved the case. It's interesting what happened to him. It was pretty wild stuff. So if the person manages to escape this, find a way out, then the problem is solved. And so in that sense, only in that sense, devotee has interest in the existence within the material world. Devotee does not aspire to make a home in this world. As a matter of fact, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches that one of the elements of knowledge, one of the symptoms of one who is in knowledge, is that one does not care about having a home. Of course, we all need some kind of a home. Please don't get me wrong. But devotee does not aspire to make this world one's home. The devotee understands, I'm a mere passenger in this world. I'm here to learn a few things and get out. So to that extent, devotee is interested in this world. Otherwise, devotee is simply absorbed in his relationship with Krishna. So in that sense, this material world is just a godless display of opulences. that which is very valuable to a materialist, to a devotee is not very interesting. And again, it's interesting to materialists only initially, but eventually it turns into a hell. Because that's just the nature of this place. It turns into a self-repeating nightmare. Because from Vaishnav's theology, all energies of God are transcendental and divine. Even the material energy is actually divine energy. So devotee, in one way, has interest in everything. But devotee being in love with Krishna, does not spend time thinking about the material world. It is preoccupied with this relationship. And we see, for example, in this chapter, when Arjuna, actually, shortly this is going to happen, very shortly, after witnessing this amazingly opulent, impressive universal form, Arjuna's relationship with Krishna will change. Because up until this point, Arjuna's relationship with Krishna is very intimate. But after witnessing all these, this display of opulences, Arjuna will step away from Krishna emotionally. Because as a friend of Krishna, Arjuna was very intimate with Krishna. So we could say that Krishna's opulence was covered by Krishna's sweetness. And so Arjuna was very intimate with Krishna. But once he saw this amazing opulence, he was, he just had to, please forgive me for having patted you on the back. Referred to you casually. I mean, Krishna and Arjuna, they would lay in the same bed. You know, they'd be like riding horses, and then they would lay down on the bed and just like talk. But now it was like, oh my goodness, I committed offenses. Because that intimacy was now compromised due to this display of opulence. And so it is natural that as devotee makes significant progress in Krishna consciousness, that devotee's relationship with Krishna becomes more intimate. And so in this way, devotee ceases to see varieties of opulences of Krishna and begins to perceive Krishna in a more intimate way. Please, not to be imitated. Some people imitate this and then their spiritual lives are finished. And it's something that rather takes place organically. Organically, prirodno, yeah, naravno. As far as devotee is concerned, he is not eager to see the universal form. But because Arjuna wanted to see Krishna in this way, Krishna actually revealed this form. Okay, that was a rather short purport. But if there are any questions, like we have one over here.
How do your friends solve the problem of that nightmare?
Oh. I'll say that at the end. Is that okay? Okay, all right. We'll say it right now. First of all, he was, I'm a very pragmatic person. Magic and stuff, that's the last thing I think about. But we were together once, and then we separated. He went to visit someone in the village of his parents. And he ridiculed or something. He offended some old woman there. And she cursed him. And so he made a connection between that curse and these nightmares. And then he went to a whole lot of people to help him solve this problem. And then eventually went to a Christian East Orthodox priest. Duhovnik. Hmm. Svechenik. Yeah. Duhovnik? Ah, okay. I'm just brushing up my Slovenian. And he himself was into this kind of magic stuff and things. And he performed some ritual and blah, blah, blah. And he told him that he was cursed. And then after that, it was gone. It was over. It was a pretty... I mean... may not impact you because you don't know him, but we were very intimate. So when I saw it happening to him, it's quite a thing. And then at the end, it was just some kind of magic. It was very impressive. Okay, anything else perhaps? Okay. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.